Welcome to the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, where members of the medical community from different roles, venues, and locations share their unique perspectives on quality healthcare, its future, and how to improve it. Now, from the Your Keynote Speaker studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is your host, Rob Oliver.
Welcome to Perspectives on Healthcare. I appreciate you being here today. Today, we are joined by Melinda Awale. He is a hospitalist. He works in West Virginia. He is a millennial, a Generation Y person. And Melinda, thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Rob, for having me on the show. It's really a privilege.
Yeah. So I tell you, let's just start right at the beginning and tell me a little bit about yourself and about your role in healthcare.
As you mentioned, I am a hospitalist, and I'm actually from India, from a small town called as Belgaum. I was born in 1982, and then was raised up in that small town. And growing up, I did realize that we had a lot of patients that I was able to see when I would volunteer at a local hospital, and I would see suffering and I would see diseases, and I was drawn with compassion to those people. That was kind of an initiating factor in trying to seek getting into medical school. The other thing that really set it in place was when my uncle had a heart attack, and he was taken to the hospital. It was a scary scene. I remember I was in my eighth grade, and I was really impressed by some of the physicians who helped him, helped him get back, and then he underwent surgery. So that experience really drew me towards medicine and attracted me towards medicine. I started working hard, got into medical school. And then when I was done with my medical school, I was contemplating as to what should be the next step. But when I started looking at the U.S. healthcare system, I was really impressed. Few things that really impressed me was the integration of technology that's here, and as to how quickly technology is being used in medical field, that really impressed me. Second thing that impressed me was evidence-based medicine. So there are guidelines, there are protocols that are followed. And for the most part, we don't do things that that seem not to work. We guide our protocols based on studies and real-world data. And so that's why, you know, the healthcare in the United States is really highly regarded everywhere in the world, and people then want to come to the United States to get treatment. And that kind of drove me to write USMLEs, and then came here in Pittsburgh, got to meet you, Rob, and then did my residency in Monroeville. And then from then on, after doing my residency, I went into the field of hospital medicine. And since 2014, I've been a hospitalist. I have been at the same place. And this is where we are now.
Yeah, fantastic. I appreciate you sharing, giving the insight kind of into the background of how you got into medicine and how you were attracted to it. Very interesting. Can you tell me, what does quality healthcare mean to you?
So, you know, Rob, we talk a lot about quality healthcare, and we've been doing that in the recent years. And quality healthcare is simply a healthcare service that is being delivered to support the patient in maintaining and improving their health. So it involves a lot of things, but basically that is what it means to me. So it could mean providing a service in a safe way, in a timely way, in the most efficient way, in a way that that is equitable to everyone. But I think also the most important part of that is patient-centered care. So we want everything to revolve around the patient. And most of the time, and sometimes we tend to forget that, but patient is the most important person of the treatment plan and of the treatment. And I think in the recent years, we have tried then to have more of a patient-centered care. And I think that is what quality healthcare means to me.
Yeah. Sometimes the patients seem to bother medical professionals. And, you know, the idea, if you got rid of all the patients, you would get rid of all of the problems in healthcare, but you would also, of course, get rid of the whole profession of healthcare anyway. Can you give me an example of quality healthcare?
A few things that come to mind. One would be maybe let's talk about the effectiveness. Most of what we practice in the United States is based on scientific knowledge and based on evidence-based practice. So we try to implicate that which has worked best in the research settings. For example, not providing unnecessary tests or not putting patients on unnecessary medications, medications that likely would not benefit the patient. So we try then to be most effective. For example, now when COVID came out, it was new. Nobody knew nothing about it. And then multiple hospitals went on different research protocols. And based on the research protocols, we then started looking at it closely and started studying it. So every hospital designed their own protocol, and everywhere, I mean, we had that big study from Oxford, which came out and said, do 10 days of dexamethasone. So we've been practicing that, and we've been seeing that patients are getting better based on those protocols. Now that is effective medicine. If you see the same treatment elsewhere in the world, there has been, people are trying different things without any rhyme or reason or any research to back that up. So what happens is it is detrimental to the patient's health. For example, putting them on high-dose steroids, which has not been studied or which has not been shown to be effective in COVID, then puts patients at a risk and they are susceptible to infections. So this is a quality healthcare measure that we practice.
Excellent. It makes a lot of sense. I think it's especially where we are right now, coming out of the pandemic. It's a great illustration of what you're saying about quality healthcare. As far as being a hospitalist, what do you wish people understood about the role of hospitalists in healthcare?
So, you know, people always ask me when I start rounding and they see me in the hospital, and they're like, what exactly is a hospitalist? And, you know, the best way to define that is basically two words. One is a surrogate physician, or a physician who is in place of your primary care, or one who is an expert in dealing with acutely ill patients when patients are hospitalized and they don't do anything in the outpatient setting. So when your primary care doesn't come to the hospital, the hospitalists take over. So they are experts in treating acute illness. So they are the ones making the calls on what tests you need, which consultants you need to see. They meet up with case managers, social workers, and they start designing a plan about your discharge. It's like a quarterback, I would say, Rob. It's more of a quarterback that holds the entire team together. You might not always score a touchdown, but you're there to hold the team together. So I think that is what a hospitalist is.
Okay. And I love the illustration, especially being here in Pittsburgh. Everything relates back to football.
You're right.
Yeah. And it, you know, the other piece of that, you know, giving the illustration of a quarterback, you may not always score a touchdown, but, you know, you're moving the team together. You're moving them down the field. It might be a field goal. It might be whatever it is. I mean, even just an adjustment in field position. But that's just me going on and on about football because it's one of my favorite sports. What excites you about the future of healthcare?
So I was thinking about this, and maybe there are two or three things that excite me about the future of medicine. Unfortunately, many a times when we talk about future, anything that's attached to revenue, that's attached to finances, that is money making, is the direction in which we are going to head. And I was looking at artificial intelligence. As much as there's so much talk about it, both in a good way and in a way which is concerning, I think artificial intelligence is going to drive the cost of medicine to about like $15 trillion in about 2030. So this has been projected by some of the globalists. So I think artificial intelligence is going to be the future of medicine. So in terms of artificial intelligence, now there are a few things that can be used as far as artificial intelligence is concerned. One is collecting all the data. We live in a world of information technology. We are now capable of collecting lots of data. So that data can be crunched and can be used in a useful way. Secondly, I think artificial intelligence is going to be used in imaging technology. They're going to feed all this different diagnosis into probably computers, and then you are going to have this neural network, and they are going to come up with the most probable diagnosis. And some places have been using that to diagnose MRIs and all of that. So I think artificial intelligence is going to be big in as far as future of medicine is concerned. The other thing that I was thinking was virtual reality. Although some of us use that to play games and all of that, virtual reality is being used in medicine, and I see that there's going to be a bigger market for it. I was just talking to one of the neurosurgeons a few days back, and he was saying that until now, all they had was two-dimensional picture of maybe a tumor or whatever was going on in the brain. But now with virtual reality, they can have a three-dimensional view of what's going on in the brain, where exactly the lesion is, and how to approach it. And they are able to even show that to the patient so that the patient will be able to understand. The advantage of having a three-dimensional picture is you can, before you get into the operating room, you can try and see how many different approaches you can have to that tumor or to that lesion. Because earlier, it used to be just that one approach. You make that approach and there is no turning back. But now you are able to view all that. So I think virtual reality is also going to be the future of medicine. And then I was also thinking of another aspect which was, I think, genetics. And I think COVID really opened our eyes. What was just a concept became a reality with the vaccine. When they came out with the mRNA vaccine, I think that was kind of a breakthrough for genetic therapies. It was fascinating because they were able to study the sequence of the virus, then make a messenger RNA, put it in your body, and then produce that same antibodies as what the virus would produce. So instead of having the virus in your system, you were just having a piece of genetic information, and that would induce antibodies and would protect you. So I think that acceptance of that vaccine, that leeway that was given by the FDA and the government, is really a big step in genetic therapy.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned genetics, virtual reality, and the artificial intelligence. So I think that fascinating, all three of them. Artificial intelligence, you had me a little bit worried that we were going to have robotic doctors, but it's the artificial intelligence is assisting the doctors in making the thing, because to me, you can't ever take the human element out of it. But then with the virtual reality, you're actually able, I think what you were saying is you can simulate how to approach things, because you've got all of the three-dimensional picture. And then with genetics, it's not putting in a weakened form of the virus. You're putting in just a genetic, you know, a genetic clip of it, which allows it. Yep. Fascinating. What is one thing that medical professionals can start doing today to improve the quality of healthcare?
So change is always a very difficult thing for anyone. And I see this because I do have a sort of leadership role as to in the place that I work at. And, you know, for the doctor, what matters most is the patient who's in front of him. And behind that closed door, behind those curtains, is that relationship between the doctor and the patient. But many a times we forget that there's a bigger and wider picture out there. It's like the healthcare of the entire community. It's the healthcare of the entire population that we are responsible for. And so to affect that healthcare of that entire population, there are a few changes that need to come about. And every physician, I think, wants to make the change, but then it sometimes becomes very taxing. So the one thing that I think medical professionals can start doing is to participate in the change, is to participate in improvements, is to do their best that they can to make changes. And I think because as technology moves ahead, we have to keep up with technology. Not just that, there are also added responsibilities brought in over you by the government, by CMS, by all these institutions. And I think they as well are driving it towards a quality healthcare system. So I think adopting to that change is something that I think every healthcare worker should look forward to and just try to go with the change.
Well said, my friend. But Melinda Awali, you have been fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective. I appreciate you being with me today. And thank you for sharing your perspective on healthcare.
Thanks for listening to Perspectives on Healthcare. Visit perspectivesonhealthcare.com to learn more about Rob Oliver or to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If this podcast was valuable, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Or if you tell a friend or coworker about the show, that would be helpful too. Join us again next time for more Perspectives on Healthcare.